Welcome back. This is week four, Marriage Matters and Rebuilders. And, you know, some of you at the beginning of the 7 weeks thought 7 weeks sounds like forever. And here we are. And after tonight, we'll be over half done already. And maybe right now you're thinking, oh, I wish it didn't have to end. Well, I'll tell you about another plan we have at the end of tonight that hopefully will interest you. Because we're going to do another seven-week session, and we're going to start it soon. We'll tell you about that, and we'd love to have you be a part of that. But I'll tell you about that at the end. Tonight, we're talking about communication, and so let me pray, and then we'll get started. God, thanks for tonight. Thanks for the people that have made time in their lives and schedules to be a part of this. God, I pray for all of us as we delve into this delicate area of communication, an area that that all of us tend to struggle in. God, would you come and be our teacher tonight? Would you open each one of our ears and minds and hearts to learn and know what you want us to get out of tonight? And I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. Well, welcome. This week, we are talking about communication. And you see the quote at the top of your notes this week, your handout. This time, it's not a quote from the Bible. It's a quote, probably a familiar quote. What we have here is a failure to communicate. Anybody remember where that is from? Where that was from? Anybody? Where? Yeah. Cool Hand Luke. Okay. But it was not Paul Newman's line. It was actually the sheriff in Cool Hand Luke. So that's a good trivia thing to know, because it was the sheriff who said, what we have here is a failure to communicate. And in Marriage Matters and Rebuilders, we talk about a lot of different topics, and some, you know, there's some stuff we struggle with and some stuff we don't, and every one of us is different, and I get that. But communication is almost a universal area of struggle in relationships. You know, I don't think there's ever been a couple that has gone into a therapist's office or counselor's office for marriage counseling and sat down and said, well, here's the deal. We struggle with a lot of different things, but communication is one thing that we do really, really well. I don't know that anybody has ever said that, because we struggle with a variety of things, but almost all of us struggle in the area of communication in our relationships. Okay, so what we're going to talk about tonight is a critical area for all of us, and hopefully we can learn some things that make us all better communicators, and that will help us not just in marriages, but in all of our relationships, and so even at work and with kids and everything else. So let's get right into it. We're going to start by talking about where we get into trouble. John Gottman, who is an author and therapist and very well respected, wrote a book called The Seven Principles for Making Marriage Work, and in this book, he talks about what he calls the four horsemen of negative interaction. In fact, Gottman goes as far as to say he can watch a married couple in conflict, and within 5 minutes of observing their conflict, he can predict with 95% accuracy whether that couple will end up in divorce or not. And it's all based on what conflict looks like, and it starts with these four horsemen, all right? And so these are four forms of communication that lead to the downfall of a marriage. So as I go through these, kind of mark which ones, you know, would probably be more applicable to me and which ones aren't. The first one, letter A, is criticism. Criticism. Now, there's a difference between complaint and criticism, okay? Complaint only addresses the action, what happened, whereas criticism attacks the person, okay? Complaint says, I'm angry that you came home late without calling. Criticism says, you came home late again without calling. You really don't care about me, do you? See, now it's no longer just about the action. Now it gets personal, and it's an attack on the person, all right? Gottman says, you can turn any complaint into a criticism by simply adding the phrase, what's wrong with you? Okay, the second four horsemen is contempt. Contempt. And criticism moves to contempt when we add cynicism and sarcasm and name-calling and eye-rolling and mockery. Gottman says contempt is fueled by long-simmering negative thoughts about the other person, that over time, through our conflict and through poor communication, we begin to build up negative thoughts about the other person, and then that leads to contempt in our communication. All right. And in contempt, the goal is to hurt or demean the other person. Which is why we do name-calling. It is, without maybe it being conscious, it is a specific intentional thing that we do with the intent of hurting the other person, all right? We say things like, well, you're always, and you never, and you're such a, and then fill in the blank with whatever adjective you'd like to add there, all right? So criticism is about blame and blaming the other person. Contempt is about disdain for the person. Both of those are very, very hurtful, okay? The third of the four horsemen is defensiveness. No, it's not. Yes, it is, okay? This is an area where I'll be, you know, very quick to say, this is, of the four, this is where I struggle the most. Defensiveness is making excuses or turning the situation around, like it's not really your fault. Godman says defensiveness is really a way of blaming the other person, blaming your spouse if you're married. You're saying, in effect, the problem isn't me, the problem is you, okay? Defensiveness always escalates the problem. And I could give you numerous illustrations from my own marriage. But just recently, Karen, there was, I honestly don't even remember what the situation was, but a person that we needed to call to do some work at our house or something, and I remember Karen said, can you call them? And I said, sure, I'll call them. Karen was going to, but something came up, and she said, will you call them? I said, sure, I'll call them. And then a couple days later, she said, did you call? And just reflexively, without even thinking, my first thing out of my mouth was, well, you didn't give me the number. I didn't have their number. You didn't give me the number, which is a way of saying, no, it's not my fault. Somehow it's your fault. And so as opposed to, you know, I had agreed to make the call, and if I didn't have the number, I should have sought out the number. But just kind of knee-jerk reflectively for me is to get defensive and to turn the blame around, right? The fourth is stonewalling. And stonewalling is checking out, either physically or emotionally, just not being present there with the person, either while you're still in the room or even leaving, okay? So it's hiding behind the paper or, watching, looking at your phone, an iPad, whatever it is, whether it's a device. It's keeping, just kind of watching, looking at the TV and pretending like the other person isn't there. It may be getting up and walking out of the room in the middle of a conversation to just, that your way of ending the conversation, your contribution at that point is to walk out. Sometimes it's in some of the language that we use. The words fine and whatever are stonewalling words. You know, when you're in the middle of a conflict and somebody says, well, we ought to, and you say fine, okay, or whatever, okay, you're probably meaning exactly the opposite of fine and whatever at that point, okay? So when my wife says, I really think we ought to do this, and I'm so frustrated, I just go, fine, okay? I'm not communicating to her that, no, that's fine. I think I agree, and that's fine, let's go forward with that, okay? I'm actually saying the opposite, but using that word. And so there's this cutting off of the conversation that is stonewalling, that really is, what I've done is I've taken control at that point. When I say whatever, I've basically said, this conversation is over and I'm ending it, okay? So stonewalling, so any one of those four, whether it's criticism or contempt or defensiveness or stonewalling, Gottman says those are the four horsemen of negative communication that will lead to the downfall of a relationship. And so which of those four, when you think of those four, which of the four do you kind of fall into the easiest? Which do you drift into the easiest, okay? For me, it's clearly defensiveness, but you have to decide for yourself. If you look at all four of those and say, I really don't struggle with any of those four, okay, then you struggle with the fifth one, which is denial. Okay. We all struggle. The question is, which one do we struggle with the most? And you'll have an opportunity in your small group to kind of come clean on that if you want to, all right? Now, that's where we get into trouble. Let's talk about good communication. The goal of good communication. Our greatest desire in communication is that we long to be heard and understood. We long to be heard and understood. There is this desire deep in the soul of a person that longs to be heard and understood. And if you think about it, that's why we yell. You ever notice that? I mean, it makes no logical sense at all that when we get into a disagreement with somebody, even somebody that we love, and the disagreement continues, as we kind of spiral the thing, you notice we also get louder. and louder and louder and louder, and pretty soon we're yelling. We're only 2 feet away from the person, and we're yelling at them at the top of our lungs. Why do we do that? I mean, if there was such a thing as an alien who came from outer space and didn't understand people and was observing and taking observations back and said, humans are really interesting. You know, when they're trying to understand what the other person is saying, when they disagree, they say the same thing over and over and over again. They just keep getting louder and louder and louder, okay? Why do we do that? Well, we do that because in that moment, we don't feel like we're being heard, and we certainly don't feel like we're being understood. And that is such a desire deep down in our soul that we will begin to say it louder and louder and yell out of our desire to be heard, which is really kind of interesting. Because I don't know if you've ever had that happen where somebody, where you start yelling at the person, the same, basically saying the same thing you've been saying for 10 minutes, but now you're just saying it louder and louder. And the person goes, wait a minute, time out. Now that you say it that way, now that you say it loud enough, maybe I wasn't hearing you before, but now I get it. Now that has never solved an argument, okay? Yelling really comes out of a frustration, and it's a frustration because we long to be heard and to be understood, okay? It's not a strategy. It comes out of that frustration, all right? The goal in good communication is not to get your point across, to get the other person to agree with you, to get your way. Although some of you have mastered getting your way through things like threats, through anger, maybe through crying, you know, emotions, things like that. Okay, so when I talk about we want to learn how to be good communicators, the goal here is not to learn to communicate so that you can win or get your way or, get the other person to agree with you. It's not that at all, okay? Letter B. If you want to be a good communicator, you must learn first and foremost to listen. You must learn first and foremost to listen. Some of you remember the best-selling book, Stephen Covey's The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, back in, I think it was in the 80s. And he talks about that. Habit number 5, Covey says, is seek first to understand, then to be understood. Seek first to understand, then to be understood. Now, this is critical because you realize where we get off base in communication, especially when we're in conflict, especially when we're arguing, is that there is nothing in us that longs to hear and understand. We feel like we're not being heard and the other person isn't getting our standpoint. And so we're going to try and, as forcefully as we can, we're going to stay at it until we think they understand our viewpoint, right? And Covey says that's the downfall of communication. The first thing to do is to seek to understand. Then to be understood. I mean, we hope that you get to a point where you're also understood. But where we get into trouble is that always becomes the priority. My priority is I want to be understood. And I don't feel like you're understanding me, so therefore I'm not going to listen until you understand me. And we have to completely reverse that and seek first to understand. Letter C, therefore, the goal of good communication is 1, to hear and understand, or as my wife would say, to get it, because there have been many times that we've been in a disagreement, and she, after a period of time, she'll say, and maybe you've heard this before, I just don't think you get it. What is she saying when she tells me that I don't get it? It means I'm not hearing and I'm not understanding, okay? I've gotten to the point where, you know, I've had to actually kind of step back and go, no, I do want to get it. And so help me understand, okay? So the priority is to hear and understand. Then secondarily, it's to be heard and to feel understood. To feel heard and to be heard and feel understood, okay? So the goal in good communication is not to get people to think like you think, but to be heard and understood, okay? And you would be amazed if you will pay attention to this, if you will practice this, you will be amazed at what that will do to your relationships and conversations. One of the greatest examples of this went back to when our youngest son was younger, and he has always wanted a puppy, He's 19 years old. He still wants a puppy, okay? But we have allergies in our family, and so we don't have animals in our house. And so that's been a difficult thing for our boys growing up, because they would love to have a dog. I'd love to have a dog. We'd all love to have a dog, but we can't, okay? And so I remember one time, I remember sitting in our living room, and he was probably in grade school, and he was just kind of frustrated and sad, and he's like, I want a puppy. I really want a puppy, Dad. And he goes, I can take care of it. I can feed it. So he even had a plan, okay? Dad, we can get a puppy because I'll take care of it. I'll feed it. I'll take it for walks all the time, and you won't have to do anything. And so I'm in my mind, I'm formulating the fatherly talk with him, which says, basically, we've had this conversation before, okay? You know we can't have a dog. And I'm getting ready to list the reasons why that we've already gone over with him before, and he's obviously ignoring, and he's not rational at all in this. And Karen, fortunately, kind of intercedes before I have a chance to open my mouth and correct him, and just makes this interesting statement. She says, you really wish we could get a puppy, don't you? Which you would think, I mean, it's what he just said. You would think he would go, well, duh, Mom, I've just said that for the last 3 years. But he didn't. He kind of stopped and he went, yeah, really bad. And she said, it must be hard for you that you want a puppy so bad, but we can't have one. And he said, yeah, it's not fair. And she said, you're right, it's not fair. And in that moment, you could just feel him calming down. And it wasn't because somehow we convinced him of something. It wasn't how somehow that he now heard and understood us. But he just wanted to be heard and understood. He was still sad. But the frustration went away. Because there was something in him that when he kind of cried out, I really want a puppy, he was not feeling heard and understood. And Karen recognized way before I did that that was the battle. And so don't make speeches. Don't lobby for your viewpoint. Communication really is about starting by hearing, understanding, and then helping the other person, all right? So the question is, what gets in the way of your ability to listen? I love these passages from Scripture. Colossians 3 says, we are to act with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience, as well as bear with each other. That words, those two words, bear with each other, does not mean that we should just tolerate each other. Bearing with means staying in the discussion, seeking to understand, staying with the person. What's going on here? Help me understand. And then it says, James says in James 1, this you know, my beloved brethren, but let everyone be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to anger. And maybe you've heard that before. Quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to anger. Which, if you think about it, is exactly the opposite of how most of us do communication. Because most of us, when there's a disagreement, we're quick to anger, quick to speak, and very slow to listen, if we listen at all. And James says, here's a great formula for communication. Be quick to listen. Do that first. First and foremost, listen. Be slow to speak. Withhold it as long as you can. And be slow to anger. And if you do those first two things, both, by the way, most of the time, the anger kind of takes care of itself. All right? So the essence of good communication, the essence of communication is listening skills. And that's where most of us haven't done well. The fact that most of us struggle in communication is because most of us never really learned or practiced listening. And how do you listen? And the first rule for this, and this is just kind of, you know, has been hugely helpful for me, is the phrase, get curious. Dan Allender says in relationships, the essence of communication is getting curious. Think back to when you were dating. Remember that? Some of us did a long time ago, okay? Remember how curious we were when we were dating? You know, when Karen and I were dating, I remember we would, you know, we'd work different places, and sometimes we wouldn't see each other till late in the evening, and then we'd go out and get some dessert or coffee and stuff, and we would talk for hours, and we were just getting to know each other, and so we were so curious about the other person and their family and growing up and all the stuff that they did, and so we would have these long, and like, no, tell me more about that. Really, you guys did that? Tell me. And so there was this natural curiosity that we had as we were building the relationship, but in some sense, we've lost that, okay? You know, we were talking, Karen and I, when we were dating, we were talking about, we had grown up going on very different kinds of vacations. And imagine a couple who, you know, he grew up going, you know, fishing in Canada with his family, and they had a cabin with no running water and no electricity. And she would just be like, you know, tell me what that's like. Oh my gosh, how do you do it with there's an outhouse. You've got to be kidding, you guys, you know. And he would say to her, well, what did you guys do for vacation? Do you guys have a cabin in Canada? No, we went to like major cities and a different one every time. Whereas he went to the same place every year for his family vacation. And she said, no, we would go to a city that, you know, and we'd go to the art museums and we'd take in a play and all this cultural stuff. And that just was so out of the realm of his understanding that he would get curious and say, what was that like? Tell me more about that, okay? And then something happens to change all that. They get married. And now they don't want to hear about those things. They don't want to talk about those things because it might threaten for them their idea of what vacation is, okay? And so, because they don't want to do vacation now the way their spouse did it growing up. And so I want to seem less curious and less interested in that. Because it feels like if I seem curious and interested, I might be giving ground. And that's the last thing we want to do, all right? And so she says, hey, I was reading about a new art museum opening in Dallas. You know, Dallas has great restaurants. And he wants nothing to do with that. So he kind of stonewalls and just like, you know, watches TV and looks at his phone and says, uh-huh. Because he's afraid that it would threaten his idea of going on a fishing vacation. And so some other time he's reading a magazine and says, hey, I read where this mild spring has really helped the muskie and northern populations up north. And she doesn't seem interested at all. Just like, huh, you know. Why is that? Because they fear giving ground. That the differences of opinion there are now no longer about curiosity and getting to know each other. It's about winning and losing. And suddenly our conversations and our disagreements become about winning and losing, not about us coming to some level of understanding with the other person, all right? So, get curious. How do you do that? One, stay focused on the other person's message. So often we're formulating what we're going to say in our mind. And if you're like me, and we'll talk about personalities in a few weeks, I have the personality where I kind of just think out loud and I listen to what I just said to decide if I agree with what I just said or not. So it just kind of, everything's just kind of out there and verbal. And so, but we tend to do that. We tend to just kind of, we're thinking about what I'm going to say or we just say it, but stay focused on their message. Fight that, you know, be quick to listen, slow to speak. Quick to listen, slow to speak. Number two, hold back your own reaction. Because if we, you know, otherwise we tend to get defensive if we react to something that they say, or we feel like we need to fix them and to get involved and do that kind of stuff, all right? You know, that's the husband that says, gosh, I'd love to have a motorcycle. I've always wanted a motorcycle. And she says, you are not getting a motorcycle, okay? Kind of like, you know, he's like, you know, as opposed to, you know, kind of going, let's talk about where that came from, kind of a deal, all right? The third is don't refute the message. And we do this all the time, by the way. And we do this a lot with our kids. See if this sounds familiar. You know, and probably every middle school student has come home at some point in their life and come up to you as a parent and said, I don't have any friends. You ever have a middle school kid say that? I just don't have any friends at all, okay? And the first thing we do, you know, I remember when Grayson did that, Grayson came home and said, I don't have any friends at all. And the first thing we do is, because we love them and we don't want them to feel that way, we just say, that's not true. You have all kinds of friends. And we start listing them, don't we? We start naming them by name. You know, so-and-so. And what we're doing is we're refuting the message. Rather than stopping and going, what's going on with my child that they would come home and feel like in this moment they don't have any friends? See, at that moment, I need to get curious and go, okay, tell me more. What's going on here? But a lot of times, out of our own uncomfortableness, we refute the message. Before they even have a chance to explain, rather than getting curious, we just tell them that what they just told us isn't true. And here's why it's not true. We can stop this conversation right now. And it often does. Letter B. The listener validates and empathizes. The listener validates and empathizes. And the reason they do that is so that they know that you hear and understand. So as my goal is to hear and understand, to get curious, I then need to learn how to validate and empathize so that the other person, my spouse in this case, knows that I hear and understand them, okay? Because my first two goals are to hear and understand and to let them know that I hear and understand, okay? And let them know, for my wife, it's to let her know that I get it. And I'm curious about more of that, all right? And I do that, number one, by letting them know that you're hearing what they're saying. Letting them know, first just flat out, that you're hearing what they're saying. And that can be just repeating back to them even the exact same words or paraphrasing what they say. And while that sounds kind of like ridiculous and mechanical, you would be amazed how good that feels to somebody that is trying to communicate. I mean, when Grayson said, I really want a puppy, and Karen just immediately said back to him, you really want a puppy. To us, that sounds like silly and mechanical, but to somebody that is trying to communicate something, when they hear those words back, there's something comforting about that because I realize that the other person heard me. I remember being in, you know, I told you that Karen and I have done a lot of marriage counseling, not counseling other people. We've been in marriage counseling a lot. And I remember one of the first times going to a marriage counselor, because I'd been trained in all the, you know, active listening stuff and paraphrasing back and repeating back to the person what they said. And I remember sitting in a counselor's office and saying something and have the counselor just kind of nodding and saying back to me exactly what I had just said. And that, like, triggers something in my brain, and I'm like, I know exactly what he's doing. I know this technique. But then I also noticed that it felt really good. It didn't feel like a technique, because I realized he'd heard me, and we could go on from there. And very often what happens is when you paraphrase back or you say to somebody what they just said, and they realize that they heard you, without any prompting at all, they'll take it the next step, and they'll tell you more. Because I want to know, before I move on, have you heard me, okay? So, number one, letting them know that you're hearing what they're saying. Number two, express that you understand their point of view, your spouse's point of view, or the other person, and affirming their reality, okay? Now, this is where we often get into trouble, because this does not mean that you have to agree with them. This may be even a case where you absolutely disagree with them, but we're not moving towards agreement at this point. We're still focusing on their message and letting them know that we hear and we understand them, okay? And so the other person's experience needs to be acknowledged and validated, okay? So when a spouse says, you know, it's really hard when you're gone for work so much these days, you know, I think sometimes our natural reaction would be, you know, to say, well, it's no picnic for me either. I'm working like 80 hours a week and traveling, you know, and so we get defensive. But what if, you know, what if instead we stopped and listened to what they were saying? I feel like you're gone all the time. And we attempted to validate and understand their point of view and acknowledge it and say something like, you know, I feel like you're gone all the time. Well, you wish I was home more, don't you? You know, it's hard for you when I've been gone a lot for work. Just that sense of validation. It says, I understand and I validate your point of view, okay? Kind of like you're right to think that. It's okay. It's okay to think that before we get into an argument. They're not calling you a bad person at that point. They're just trying to express, I'm having a hard time. And a lot of times we shut that down. Like, well, you know, it's no picnic for me either, kind of a deal, okay? Well, at that point, you just shut off communication. Number three is to express empathy to the person what you think he or she might be feeling. And you know the difference between sympathy. Sympathy is feeling sorry for somebody. Empathy is feeling what they feel and working to understand what they feel. And so that's where we can say things like, so you're feeling this way. Or when that happened, you must have felt this. Or even with elementary school kids, when Grayson said, so that makes you really sad. You know, that's empathy. When somebody can identify a feeling and attach it to what you just said, to the experience that you're talking about, and say, that must make you sad. Now there's empathy involved. When I begin to understand, when somebody begins to understand not just what happens to me, but how I feel, there's a level of understanding there that they don't get any other way, all right? So in that same scenario, you know, the person who says, I feel like you're it's so frustrating. It's always hard when you're gone for work. And they say, I can understand that it would be hard if I was you. You know, I might feel that same way too. And if, you know, if it was reversed and I was home and you were gone all the time, yeah, you know, that would be hard for me too. And I remember the time Karen and I were, I think I was away, I was doing youth ministry, I was with Young Life at the time, and I think I was away at camp for a week or more, and she was home with Tyler when he was a baby, and she was thrilled that I got to do that. She loved what I did. She'd been to camp herself. She loved that whole experience with high school kids, and so she was thrilled for me that I got to do that. She wasn't mad, she wasn't jealous, any of that kind of stuff. But I remember one time talking to her on the phone, and things were going great at camp and all that kind of stuff. And I'm thankful she said this, but she had the courage to say, she said, don't get me wrong. I'm thrilled that you're there. I'm glad it's going well. I'm praying for you. I think it's awesome. But you just need to know it's hard for me. And I said, what's hard for you? And I'm thinking she's going to say, because I wish I was there with you. She said, and maybe this is hard for you to understand. She said, but when you're gone, she said, everything at home is the same. It's the same routine and everything else, except you're just not here. Whereas for you, you're there and everything is different and exciting and new and all that kind of stuff. She said, so for me, the week goes a lot slower because I have to manage everything just without you. And that was real. And I went, I had never thought about it that way before. That when I'm away from home and doing stuff and busy, it's harder for her because the difference is everything is the same except I'm just not there. And so to stop and go, I remember stopping and going, if it was reversed, I would feel exactly the same way. No, I get that. That was so helpful to hear, okay? The number four, in the validating, empathizing category, remember that a listener's nonverbal communication must reflect a heart of genuine caring and intentional focus. Nonverbal communication. In other words, tone of voice, posture, eye contact, leaning forward, so that your body looks like so you set the phone down and you turn it over and you look at them and say, no, tell me more. Which says, my body is even communicating, I want to know more. As opposed to, sitting back with your phone and like, yeah, no, I'm listening kind of a thing. Because body language there is saying, no, I'm not listening. 70% of what we communicate is nonverbal. 70% of our communication. Only 30% is in our words. Your nonverbal communication must match your verbal communication or it will go right out the window. It won't be worth anything. All right. Now, probably one of the clearest examples of this idea of validating and empathizing happened a number of years ago. Grayson, who has always loved football, was playing. He played junior tackle football growing up, and then about going into seventh grade, he had had a year away from football, and he hadn't said much. And it was right about the time, remember, when all the kind of the growing concern over concussions in football and should kids be playing football and all, and we were right in the midst of all that and going, maybe he shouldn't be playing football. And then he was going into his seventh grade year and going back to the school that he had been at before And there had been some challenge even with some of the boys in that school with Grayson. And so we were kind of a little bit cautious about starting the year there. And Grayson said to me one day, he goes, "I want to play football again, Dad. My friends are playing football and I want to go back out. I want to play football again." And I was like, oh, crap. Because now I knew I had to have a conversation with Karen. And I knew how that was going to go, you know. Because I thought, oh, cool, he's going to play football. I'm a dad who loves to watch my son play football. And so I remember going to Karen and saying, not that day, because it took me a couple days to get the courage up. But I remember going to Karen and saying that, you know, Grayson was talking and he really wants to play football this year. Now, I knew what her reaction would be, but I was prepared. Because I knew what all of her arguments were, and I had an answer for every single one of them. Okay? Because I knew she was going to say, well, you know, there's concussions and the fear of injury. I know, but the progress they've made in helmets and protection these years, it's way better than it's ever been. And she was going to talk about, you know, he hadn't had a growth spurt yet, and he'd be one of the smaller kids on the team. But that's okay, because I knew the position he would be playing would not be, you know, like a head-to-head contact kind of a position, you know, and he's going to be, you know, in a new school and need to get going with the academics, and the boys, and he really wanted to play basketball, and maybe he should spend the fall getting ready for basketball. And so I had answers for all of those things. And so when she started going down the list, there was something in me, I think it was God, that just said, be quick to listen and slow to speak. Don't say anything. Just acknowledge. And so as she was going through her list, she's talking about the fear of injuries, and I said, yeah, I get that. I mean, that's a very real concern. I share that with you. You're right. Yep. You know, he's going to be one of the smaller kids on the team. I said, And we can't not take that into consideration. That's a concern. Obviously, that would be. We need to talk about that. And this new school and academics, and you know, and so I just validated all of those kinds. I wasn't placating her or not, you know, using this as a technique. I just was honestly trying to empathize, hear, and understand her perspective. And we got through all of that. And I said, those are all valid concerns. And I said, he wants to play. We have those concerns. We need to talk. We just need to talk more about that. And she said, you're right, we do. And that was the end of that conversation. Okay. The next day, having no more conversations about that, Karen came up to me and said, what do we need to do to get Grayson signed up for football? Who are you and what have you done with my wife? See, here was what was going on. Her perception, which was true, was that this was a conversation that Grayson and I were having. Dad, I want to play football. And she knew that I was a dad that probably would love to have my son play football. And she was feeling left out of that process. And she just needed to be heard and included and understood. And when she felt heard and understood, that was 90% of the battle for her. She still had all those concerns, but she knew how much he wanted to play. And so suddenly, that brought her onto the same team, and we're all moving forward together, all right? So, huge, huge learning for me on that. And then finally, letter C is to practice. How do you learn to listen? You practice. And that's what we're going to do right now. And so I'm going to have us do something for just a few minutes that I'll warn you right now, it's going to make you really uncomfortable, okay? But just so that you know from the depths of my heart, I don't care. because I care enough about you learning this process. And like I said, most of us never learn to listen well. And so what we're going to do is we're just going to do a little exercise for about 3 minutes where you're going to practice listening. And here's what I want you to do. In a minute, not yet, I want you to get in pairs, okay? If you're here as a couple, that would be a really good pair to get into. And if not, just get with somebody at your table. Table facilitators can help us do that. And then what you're going to do is I'm going to have you turn your chairs so you're actually kind of facing each other. And then designate one person to be the talker and one person to be the listener. And then for 3 minutes, and I'll keep track, you don't have to watch it. For 3 minutes, I want the talker to, let's go back to the thing we talked about with vacations as a kid growing up. You talk about vacations that you went on as a kid growing up. And listener, all you're going to do is paraphrase back and say, tell me more about that. And give, you know, no other comments, no opinions, no feedback, none of like switching to, well, here's what we did, any of that kind of stuff. Just seek to hear and to understand. And to let them know that you understand by paraphrasing back to them what they said or expressing a feeling and seeing if that was correct. You know, that must have been really scary. Sometimes we express a feeling that we think that we're empathizing with the person and it's not the right feeling. It's still a great thing to say. Because I may say, or a counselor may say to me, well, that must have been really been scary. Well, no, it wasn't scary. It was this. And that's a great part of the conversation. So don't hesitate to say, well, you know, that must have been really sad. Well, it wasn't really sad. It was more frustrating. Whatever that is. Okay. So for 3 minutes, your body language is going to be totally zoned in. You're going to be paraphrasing back to them what they said. If you need to ask a question, just get curious, okay? And you're going to do that for 3 minutes. And then I'll call you when it's time, and then you're going to switch. And the other person is going to be the talker, and the other person is going to be the listener. And you're going to do it 3 more minutes. And so everybody has a chance to be the talker and the listener, okay? Does that make sense? All right. Why don't you turn right now where you are, get with the person that either you're with or came with, or you're going to do that with. Determine who's talking first. If you're not sure, if you're going to spend a lot of time deciding who's who, just let the older person talks first. We'll do that. The older person talks first, okay? And you want to lie about your age, you go ahead and do that. All right, so you ready? Everybody know what you're talking about? Get ready. I'm going to give you 3 minutes, and then I'm going to come back and switch us. On your mark, get set, talk. All right, time. If I have your attention back up here for just a second, before we switch, I just want to ask you both one quick question just to keep this in your mind, and we'll get to this when we get to the small groups. And the question is, how did that feel? How did that feel, one, to be the listener and be just zoned in on what the other person is saying and not trying to formulate what you were going to say? And then how did it feel to be the listener, to be the talker? How did it feel to be listened to at that kind of a level, even though it was just about vacation, all right? Now, we're going to switch. You don't need to switch chairs, just switch roles. And I'm going to give the other person to be the talker and the other person a listener, and you've got 3 minutes. Ready, go. All right, time. If I can have your attention back, if you can turn your chairs and be engaged back up here. Again, a couple questions. For those of you that were the talker that time, how did that feel? How did it feel to be listened to like that and to have the permission to just talk? And as the listener, how did that feel? To be just focused on their message and not thinking about what you were going to say. Okay. And for some of you, you know, that may be the longest you've ever dialed in and listened like that. You know? And you know, I venture to say for some of you, that may be a powerful experience because that may have been the first time in a long time that you have felt listened to. And that can be profound. And it was only 3 minutes. In fact, it was less than 3 minutes. I gave you less time than 3 minutes because I knew that 3 minutes would overwhelm you. So it was like 2:45. But now imagine that you apply that in a relationship or in a marriage to something other than something just, you know, not mundane, but as simple as vacations, and you start responding to a spouse who says, I feel like you would rather spend more time with your friends than with me. Imagine a conversation where you stop, you don't get defensive and react, but you say, whoa, tell me more about that. And then you listen to your spouse the way you just listened in this exercise, for 3 minutes, and see where that conversation might go very, very differently than you're used to it going, all right? So when we get to our small groups, I want to have you spend the first little bit of time in your group just kind of processing what was that like for you? And are there ways that you can take that little exercise and apply that to your relationship back home and even other relationships in your life. Because that could be a game changer, I guarantee you. All right. Now, in our remaining time, let's talk a little bit about conflict. How do you deal with conflict in a healthy way? And I first want to go to what the Bible has to say about conflict resolution, and that's a very famous passage in Matthew 18. In fact, around here at church, we talk about, you know, we hold Matthew 18 very high as a value around here about how we do conflict resolution, all right? Well, this is what Matthew 18 says. These are the words of Jesus when Jesus says, "If a fellow believer hurts you, go and tell him. Work it out between the two of you. If he listens, you've made a friend. If he won't listen, take one or two others along so that the presence of witnesses will keep things honest and try again. If he still won't listen, tell the church," okay? So now in Matthew 18, this is specifically written about conflict within the church, but it's a pattern. It's also about it's conflict when somebody has hurt you. So it's what you do in the church when somebody has hurt you and how you carry that out. But it's also a great way to handle conflict with others and in marriages. So we apply it kind of across the bounds there, okay? So it's not just about confronting somebody with sin issues. It's about conflict as well. And the principles are this. Number one, go directly to the other person. Notice that the first thing Jesus says, go and tell him. Go directly and talk to the person that has hurt you, okay? And the goal is always reconciliation. Through this whole process, the goal in conflict is always reconciliation. So the first step is in reconciliation is go talk directly to the person. If you don't get reconciliation there, Jesus says, take someone with you, okay? This does not mean take another gun with you to shoot the person with two guns, okay? This is not necessarily take somebody with you who agrees with your side of the story so you can confront the person. Remember, the goal is reconciliation. So when we take somebody with us, it means take somebody with you who can be impartial, whose primary goal will be reconciliation between the two of you. And that's a mistake that most of us make. Even if we take somebody with us, we take somebody with us that agrees with our side, all right? Again, it's about reconciliation. And then the third, it says, if they still won't listen, tell the church, okay? That doesn't mean go tell everybody at church. In this model, it means tell the leaders of the church, or in our case, it would be the elders, okay? So if you've gone through these two steps and you haven't gotten reconciliation by talking directly to the person, you've sat with somebody else, maybe a counselor. That's where counseling is really a good third person to take. Is in fact, if I'm trying to choose somebody, if I'm in conflict with my wife or anybody else, and I want to bring a third person in, it should be my goal to bring in somebody who is impartial. In fact, if I choose somebody who will be on my side, it doesn't help us towards reconciliation. So that's why counselors are great, because they're neutral. And it says if you still don't get, you know, then go to the elders of the church and see if you can, again, see if you can seek reconciliation that way. Okay? So now what's really interesting, if you look at the language of this, if you ever studied the Bible, this is what we say is called command language in the Bible. It's not an if you want to do this, if this is something you want to work on. It says when you're in conflict, go. It's a command. Go. You do this. Okay? And so the principles, it says when in conflict, talk directly to your spouse or to, you know, the other person, whoever you're in conflict with, not to others. Notice, go back and look sometime when you have a chance, go back and read Matthew 18 again and realize that nowhere in Matthew 18 is there an allowance for talking to somebody else about your conflict. Did you hear that? There's never an allowance for talking to somebody else about the conflict you're experiencing with somebody. But we're masters at doing that, aren't we? We call somebody on the phone and go, yeah, I'm really having conflict with my wife. Can you pray for me? You know, or I just want some counsel. I just want some advice before I have this conversation. And we say a lot of things. Really, when if you get down to it, our heart of hearts is, I just want to talk to somebody about this. I want to talk to somebody else about this. I want to tell somebody else about my conflict. And the Bible says that just does not help the process. Okay, so the rule is this. Talk to the person, not about the person. When in conflict, talk to the person, not about the person. The second principle, letter B, is remember that unresolved issues don't go away. And men, I dare say that we're masters of this one. You know, I'm just gonna not say anything. I'm mad now, but I'm not going to say anything, and I'm just going to let it go away, okay? Unresolved issues don't go away. Anger doesn't go away. They pile up. until the next time there's conflict, okay? This may sound a little bit crude. I don't know how to say this correctly, but have you ever had an experience on the toilet where there's just, to be honest, too much poop for one flush in the toilet? Maybe it's too much junk food. Maybe you ate too much. Maybe you got a teenager. I don't know what it is. But you ever had that experience where you flush and then you just, the poop looks like it kind of goes away, but then you just see the water starting to rise? And you're thinking, this is not good, okay? And maybe you turn the water off and it stops, and you look, and the poop's completely gone. It's just kind of some yucky water sitting there, and you just say, I'm just going to leave it. If you've ever had a teenager, you know that's exactly how they handle it. They just leave it, okay? And then if you leave it for long enough, eventually the water will kind of seep back down to what looks like a normal level, right? So everything looks normal. Is everything normal? No, okay? Because that poop is still there. It's just out of sight, okay? And it will stay there until what happens? The next time you flush the toilet. And then you got big problems, okay? Conflict is the same way. It's just like poop in a toilet, okay? And you heard it from me first, right? So let's assume it's a husband and wife, it's a beautiful day, he wants to play golf with his friends, she wants to work in the yard or do storm windows, wash the storm windows, get ready for the winter, and it doesn't matter what happens now, there's going to be conflict. Because if he stays home and helps her, he's going to resent that he's not able to play golf with his buddies, she's going to resent his attitude because he's not have a good attitude about helping her. If he plays golf, she's going to resent his choice to go play golf rather than stay home and do what needs to be done around the house. And all the while he's playing golf, he's going to resent her lack of support for him playing golf, okay? If that's not resolved, that conflict will just linger like poop in a toilet for them, okay? And then come Thanksgiving, when they're trying to decide whose house to go to for Thanksgiving, her family's or his family's, they don't realize it. But that unresolved conflict from earlier in the fall, that will pile up and add to the conflict around this current decision. Because those things just continue. If we don't deal with them one at a time when they happen, that conflict will build up. And we will begin to experience some of what Gottman talked about at the beginning with those four horsemen, with that growing sense of contempt for the other person. And so conflict must be dealt with immediately. It doesn't go away on its own, all right? Letter C, identify the issue and focus on it. And here's the key. Remember that the other person is not the issue. Identify when you're in conflict with your spouse or somebody else, first of all, identify what the issue is. And remember that the other person is not the issue. I have a friend who was in counseling. He had a coffee cup that was one color on one side and another color on the other side. And he would set that between the couple and say, tell me what color, let's talk about the color of this coffee cup. And the person on this side would say, you know, it's orange. And the person on this side would say, it's blue. And they would have to try and convince the person that they were right. And he would say, this is how you guys do arguments. You try and convince the person that your view, your perspective of the issue is the correct perspective. And then you have different perspectives, and so all you do is argue, trying to get the other person to see it like you see it. And he said, here's what you need to do. You need to treat conflict like this. Keep turning around. Tell me what you see. Here's what I see. I want to understand how you see it. And we begin to do it that way and realize that the other person, how quickly in our conflict does the other person seem like they're the issue? And that's where Gottman's four horsemen come in. You know, the four horsemen of criticism, contempt, and defensiveness, and stonewalling. When we begin to believe that the other person is the issue and not the real issue, that's where those four horsemen rear their ugly heads. So remember that good communication is primarily about listening, but the speaker has responsibilities too. Obviously, in communication, you're not both listening. One person is listening, the other person is speaking. And so I just want to kind of end by just pointing out a couple things that the speaker has responsibilities too. If you're the one who's speaking and the other person is listening to your perspective, letter A, speak for yourself. Speak for yourself. Use I statements. Statements like, "You never want me to have fun with my friends," is not a helpful statement. When I start saying, "Here's what you do, here's how you feel, here's what your motive was," that doesn't help the conversation at all. Talk about myself. Here's how I see it. Here's how I feel. Here's what that does for me. Letter B, talk about the issue. And again, remember that the other person is not the issue. Everybody else's wife lets them play golf. See, when I say that, now I've made you the issue. The issue isn't that we have conflict around whether I should play golf today or not. The issue is you. Because, you know, everybody else's wife lets them play golf except for you. So the problem is you. Okay. So remember that the other person is not the issue, even if something that they said or did is the issue. I have good friends who have moved to Texas, but they were Marriage Matters leaders for years, and she talked about, because they got married, they were both in their late 20s, and so she had a good chunk of adulthood before they got married, and she was living on her own and working. Her dad had always been the car guy for her. Her dad kind of helped her pick out her first car, and then even into her mid-20s, anytime she had a question about what kind of a car to get, or, you know, what kind of a trade to do, or even if she had a problem with her car and a question about her car, she always called her dad. Okay, that was just, she just grew up doing it. That was just normal for her. So after they were married, one time she was having car problems, and she just instinctively called her dad. And her husband said, you know, they kind of sat down, and he dealt with it really appropriately, but he said, "I just got to tell you that when you called your dad to ask him about a car problem," he said, "I understand your dad probably knows way more about cars than I do, but the fact that you wouldn't ask me first as your husband, I felt diminished." And for her, it was, you know, that was eye-opening. She's like, "I never thought about it that way." Okay, so the fact that they dealt with it correctly, she wasn't the issue, but something that she said or did was the issue. And so, but to deal with that appropriately, okay? And then ask yourself the question, what is this really about? Because often what we say is the issue, there's something underlying that isn't the issue. You know, with Karen, football wasn't the issue. What was really under that was not being included in the discussion. That was the issue. And then finally, set the table. Conversations sometimes like this need to be planned. And to say, you know, if there's something that you need to talk about, there's something you want to express, your feeling, is to say, "Is this a good time? Or can we set a time? You know, I know it's busy, maybe after the kids go to bed. Sometime before we go to bed tonight, can I have 10 or 15 minutes of your time? I want to process some stuff with you." And keep in mind, you know, personalities play a huge part in this, okay? I'm an extrovert. My personality is such that, you know, I want to talk now. And I'll probably start talking now whether you're ready for me to talk now or not, okay? And that's a problem. My wife is an introvert, and she needs time to think and to process stuff. And so I need to be able to not just kind of impose a conversation on her in the moment that she's not ready for. And so for me, it's much better for her if I say, "We need to talk about, you know, Grayson wants to play football. We need to spend some time talking about that. Can we talk about that sometime, you know, tonight after dinner?" Whatever that is. That gives her time to kind of get ready for that. So don't just assume that the other person is like you or will respond to doing it when you want to do it. And then, you know, setting a time limit is great, especially for men, because, you know, if our wife sits us down and says, "Hey, we need to talk about this," our first thought is, "How long is this going to take? You know, geez, will I get to see the second half of the game or not?" You know, and so just to say, "Can we spend 15 minutes talking about this?" That's very, very helpful. And then work your really hardest to stay to that. And if you need to go over that, ask for that time too. I think we need to discuss this more. Can we keep talking now, or should we come back to it later? Okay. And then don't over discuss. Don't over communicate. Once you feel like you've got some resolve and you hear and understand, be okay with that. All right. So, where do we go from here? Here's what I believe. I believe that if we would change the way that most of us communicate in relationships, especially in marriages, to not just see communication as trying to convince the other person of our viewpoint or seeing arguments as something to win or lose, but to make the goal, to make our goal in communication to hear and to understand, that could be a game changer. And so what we're going to do now is give you a chance to talk in your groups. We've got a little bit longer now because we did the little discussion, the listening exercise, and that's fine. But spend some time in your groups now talking about that, but then just talk about the communication stuff we talked about here, and then I'll be back in about 45 minutes to wrap our time up. All right? Thanks.